Shivaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 3, Krishna is the source of all incarnations, text 11.
Shastam matirapatyatvam vita prapto nasuyaya anviksikim malakaya Prala-dadibhya ucchiva. Shastam,
the sixth one.
Atre,
of Atri.
Apatyatvam, sonship. Vritaha,
being prayed for.
Prapta,
obtained.
Anasuyaya,
by Anasuya.
Anvikshikem,
on the subject of transcendence.
Alarkaya,
unto Alarka.
Pralada Adibhya,
unto Pralad and others.
Uchivan
spoke. Translation. The sixth incarnation of the Purusha was the son of the sage Atri. He was born from the womb of Anasuya, who prayed for an incarnation. He spoke on the subject of transcendence to Alarka, Prahlad, and others, Yadu, Haihaya, etc. Purport. The Lord incarnated himself as Dattatreya, the son of Rishi Atri and Anasuya. The history of the birth of Dattatreya as an incarnation of the Lord is mentioned in the Brahmanda Purana, in connection with the story of the devoted wife. It is said there that Anasuya, the wife of Rishi Atri, prayed before the Lords Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva as follows. My Lords, if you are pleased with me, and if you desire me to ask for you some sort of blessing, then I pray that you combine together to become my son. This was accepted by the Lords, and as Dattatreya, the Lord expounded the philosophy of the spirit soul, and especially instructed Alarka, Prahlada, Yadu, Haihaya, etc.
Om Agyati Manandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Shakshuru Nitam Yena Tasmai Si Guru Ve Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Darati Svapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Dipai chireve idasantrama vipeche dipai te vivritihinu samano dharma yastadri kevi chavishnu tayor vivati govindam adipurusam tamaham bhajami. In the Brahma Samhita it is stated that so many incarnations of the Lord are appearing in this world. Just as from one candle one can light many other candles. In this way Krishna is Adipurush, he is the original personality of Godhead, and therefore Krishna is unique. Krishna, more than any other incarnation, comes to display the eternal pastimes of the spiritual world, whereas the other incarnations are particularly engaged with the activity of paritranayu sadhanam vinasya saduskritam dharma samstarpanartya sambhavami yuge yuge, or wherever there are the pious or the impious, these incarnations of the Lord are appearing to establish the principles of Dharma. And that is what we see. We see that Krishna appears in Vrindavan and performs his transcendental pastimes, and then at age 11 Krishna is leaving Vrindavan and eventually first Mathura and then settles in Dwarka and so on. We see that Krishna then in Dwarka is in separation from Vrindavan. In the Priyat Bhagavatamrita there's a description how Krishna was one day did not get up, and everyone was in the palace in Dwarka was speaking how Krishna was not well. Shh, quiet, Krishna is not well. Then Satyabhama said, look, I am tired of this hypocrisy. Everybody knows very well that Krishna is perfectly healthy and that he's not sick at all. Everyone knows the real cause. Satyabhama, please, please. Satyabhama, please. No. Everybody knows it, that Krishna actually is not sick at all, but that he is simply suffering in separation. Satyabhama, I tell you, in separation from the residence of Vrindavan. Satyabhama, please. Everybody knows that Krishna... why did Krishna marry 16,108 wives? Why? He said, because he has 16,108 gopis. And in separation of these gopis, he married these wives so that he would think of the gopis. And every wife, Satyabhama, every wife of Krishna knows very well that Krishna at night, sometimes, is just speaking the names of the gopis in Vrindavan. So anyway, Satyabhama just was impossible. And she just had to say it because that's how she is. That she's not the tactful type, if you know what I mean. She is very straightforward. And she had to say it that yes, Krishna was in separation from the residence of Vrindavan. And the result was that Krishna was not able to do anything. Krishna did not get up. Krishna was just totally dysfunctional. So Lord Brahma was getting quite concerned about this, and therefore he appeared. On his swan carrier, Lord Brahma came down to Dwarka, and then he brought along with him Vishwakarma, and a whole plan was designed. And the plan was that Vishwakarma should make an imitation Vrindavan, which is what he did. And it looked really, really, really good, exactly like Vrindavan. And he had statues there of all the residents, like Mother Yasoda. And Mother Yasoda was standing there with a little pot with yogurt in her hand. But just a doll, but perfect likeness, perfect. Madame Tussaud couldn't come close. Right? I mean, that good, Vishwakarma. So much, such a likeness. Then he told Krishna, yes. They went to Krishna's room and said, Krishna, today you're going to Vrindavan. Krishna, Vrindavan. Suddenly he was awake, suddenly he was alright, suddenly he was ready for action, and Balaram went along, and Rohini also, because Rohini is in both Dwarka and Vrindavan. Then all the other residents of Dwarka were hiding in the bushes to see what was going on. And Krishna was just getting ecstatic, just like in Vrindavan, and he was running around in his cowherd boy dress and holding onto his flute. It was really, really amazing. And everything was wonderful until Krishna came to the ocean. Ocean? Yamuna? No. This is not the Yamuna. This is the ocean. Then I am not in Vrindavan. Oh, and I forgot to mention, when he saw the statue of Mother Yasoda, he just snatch the yogurt. And that didn't upset him that she didn't move, because that happened more often. She used to get ecstatic symptoms and would just freeze on the spot. So that was all right, you know. Yeah. But when he saw the ocean, no. You know, then he understood, this is not Dwarka. This is Dwarka, this is not Vrindavan. Then, you know, Lord Brahma appeared on his swan carrier and started to offer prayers, and Lord Brahma told this verse, Paritranayu sadhanam vinasya saduskritam dharma samsarpanatya sambhavami yuge yuge. I appear millennium after millennium to establish the principles of religion and to annihilate the demons. And in this way, Lord Brahma was reminding Krishna of his duty as an incarnation of the Lord. Because this is what the incarnations of the Lord are actually doing. Dharma samsarpanatya. But not Krishna. Not Krishna. A little bit on the side. But that's not the principal reason why Krishna appears in this world. The principal reason why Krishna appears in this world is actually to give a display of his eternal pastimes in the spiritual world, to attract his devotees to the spiritual world. In this first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that the sages of Naimisaranya are asking 6 questions to Suta Goswami. And in these 6 questions, then the Bhagavatam is basically the answer to those 6 questions. And one of the 6 questions is to give a description of all the incarnations of the Lord. So that is now being answered. And also the question is asked, what is the purpose? What is the purpose for all these incarnations to appear in this world? And the answer is given to particularly deliver those who are thoroughly established in the mode of goodness. Not just goodness, but especially purified goodness. Or in other words, those who are taking up spiritual life, those who are acting according to the will of the Lord. Pravitim cha nivritim cha. There are the injunctions of the scriptures, and those who abide by the injunctions of the scriptures are the devotees. They are sura. And those who are disregarding the injunctions of the scripture, they are asura. Like that it is classified. So those who abide by the will of the Lord, manmana bhavamat bhakto majaji mam namaskaru, mami vaijaisi satyante bhakti jano priyosime, that one who is bowing down to me and serves me with love, such a person, he is most dear to me. Yes. So the devotee is bowing down. Bowing down means is giving up his independence, and the devotee is just in that way completely dedicating himself to Krishna. He has no separate agenda. And whatever desires come up that are not favorable for devotional service, anakulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya virginam, that the one must give up whatever is unfavorable for the service of Krishna and accept what is favorable. And in this way the devotees are acting. And the incarnations of the Lord are appearing time and time again to disseminate transcendental knowledge. Then this is recorded in the Puranas. That is the main purpose of the Puranas. Purana means the old or history, Vedic history, but not the history of this king and that king and this one ruled the earth and that one made politics. In school we had to learn just politics. Right? And who wants to hear about the politics of today? such a thing. Yeah? And then you have to learn everything about politics from hundreds of years ago. Yeah? It's like just politics. But this is not just, even in the Bhagavatam, if there is some politics, it's not ordinary politics. No, it's transcendental politics. What's the difference between ordinary politics and transcendental politics? In one sense, they are just the same. I mean, in the sense that there is manipulation, you say one thing and want to get another done, and things are hidden and so on. So there is plenty of politics actually in Bhagavatam. But this politics is connecting one with Krishna. And that kind of politics is nice politics. We want to hear about that. Different tricks to connect one with Krishna. So we read the Puranas giving us all these narrations of kings. But when it is describing kings, it is describing saintly kings, Raja Rishis, or demoniac kings that are being killed by Krishna, but saintly kings that are worshipping Krishna. So in this way, by hearing about such personalities, we are being purified. Sometimes in the ninth canto, there are long list of dynasties. And it says, and from this king he had four sons, and then those he married such and such, and they had, and it's like a whole endless list of names. And you go, can I skip this chapter? The mind says. But then, why? Why name after name of people that it has no meaning to us. No meaning. You hear all these names, it's like, okay, you know, who's this one, who's that one? Even here, you know, who is Hayhaya, and who is Alaka, and who's who? You know, so many personalities. Who are they all? Well, whether we know or whether we don't know, it doesn't really matter so much. Yeah? But we should know they were all devotees. They were all devotees, and just hearing their names is auspicious. To hear the name of a devotee is purifying, is invoking blessings, and is invoking mercy of Krishna. Because when one says the name of a devotee, Krishna is looking. Oh, someone calling the name of my devotee. So in this way, just to hear about these dynasties is auspicious and bringing us mercy. So that is our culture. We have a culture based on mercy. Once I was doing a seminar on the topic of mercy called Expanding the Mercy in All Directions, and I was looking at Sanskrit words for mercy, and it said kripa, daya, anukampa, and well, you could see that the word daya was oftentimes used for mercy in a general sense. Sometimes the word kripa also, but other times kripa was used in a personal sense. Like, give it to me, that mercy. Kripa. I want kripa. Daya is more the mercy to all. Then anukampan was given for mercy. And then in the 10th canto, whenever the word mercy came up, the word that was used was, well, the 10th canto gives us the relationship between Krishna and his eternal associates. Right? And in other words, liberated souls. And there, the word for mercy was prasad. It was always prasad. Everything was prasad. Not only the foodstuffs that had been offered to Krishna, but everything was prasad. Right? They saw everything as Krishna prasad, mercy of Krishna. And they lived. They lived on this mercy. That is the essence of the liberated souls. They are living on the mercy of Krishna. And everything is about that mercy of Krishna. Just like devotees are always thinking of prasadam. That is just, it's always. It's like we're always thinking of prasadam. We know it's just, it either just happened or it's just about to come. It's going to happen soon. And that's the life of a devotee, right? So either we're living on the mercy from before, right? Or we're living in anticipation of the mercy that is just about to come. So it expands then not only, as I said, into the yajna sista, the remnants of sacrifice and foodstuffs, but everything, all different types of mercy of Krishna. The mercy that we got and the mercy that we are, well, in anticipation of. And that is spiritual life. So spiritual life, therefore, naturally, like with the prasadam in the form of foodstuffs, one has to be alert. For example, when you're in Melbourne Temple and you walk close to the kitchen, you just look, you know, just in case there is some Mahaprasadam standing there, for a moment unattended, no, you know what I mean? Mahaprasadam all by itself. And then you have to be fast. Strike. Like that, a devotee is alert. Always, right? Always, never ever, never ever that a devotee is just not attentive to the possibility of some Mahaprasada. Every devotee is the same. So this expands into our relationship with mercy. So gradually we get alert to all kinds of mercy, to all the varieties of mercy. And therefore a devotee is always eager, looking for some opportunity for that mercy. We see, for example, the story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of the Gundicha Marjana. And in this story of Gundicha Marjana, the cleansing of the Gundicha temple, we may recall that the devotees were all given brooms and they all started sweeping dirt, and they swept a lot of dirt in a big pile, and then that dirt was thrown outside, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made them sweep again. And again they were sweeping, but this time the more fine dirt. So we know that this is an analogy, and is according to the purport of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, is referring to the cleansing of the heart. First, one has to give up the gross sinful activities. We're accepting regulative principles. That is the gross cleansing. And then comes the finer cleansing, where we have to not only give up gross activities, but where we have to actually develop the qualities of a Vaishnava. We have to actually embrace Vaishnav qualities and Vaishnav behavior. So it's a more internal cleansing, more difficult in a way, because it's finer dust. It's quite clear, four regulated principles. It's sort of, all right, you do it or you don't. There's no doubt about it. It's like, okay, you're following them or you're not following them. It's clear. It's very visible. At least to ourselves, and may also be to others. But these other things are subtle. They're more subtle. Am I humble or am I not humble? It's complicated, because a little bit, a trace of pride is there, or any other Vaishnav quality. Am I tolerant or still not completely tolerant? So more difficult, this finer cleansing. And then, at the next stage, they brought pots of water, and we remember they went to Indradyumna Sarovar, and devotees were running with pots up and down, and sometimes they clash into each other, and the pots would smash. And somehow or other, by transcendental mercy of Lord Chaitanya, everyone was just saying, Krishna, 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 for anything. There was only one language, Krishna. You know, and someone would say Krishna, which would mean, please give me that pot. Someone would say Krishna, which means, throw the water here. Or someone would say Krishna, Krishna, means, I need some help. And everyone understood each other while they were just calling out Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So there was a lot of Krishna everywhere, and people running around with pots, and water was thrown around. But there was one Bengali Vaishnava who suddenly saw, in the course of running around with a pot of water, which he saw the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, effulgent, very large. And when he saw these lotus feet, it flashed through his head that this was an opportunity for mercy. And he threw his water on the feet of Mahaprabhu and then just drank the water. Lord Chaitanya grabbed him and was ready to punish him, and he called Swarup Damodar and he said, look what your Bengali Vaishnava is doing here, you know. And Swarup Damodar chastised him and threw him out of the temple, but he was like, I got the mercy. So the mood was very good. So this alertness is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He took advantage of the opportunity. He saw it, but no one else saw it. But he was alert. So this is Vaishnava, Gaudiya Vaishnava. Not dull, not closed, not om and somewhere in another state of mind. No, Vaishnava is awake. Vaishnava is here. Vaishnava is looking for opportunities for service, opportunities for mercy, and always eager. Vaishnava is active. Vaishnava is ready to take any chance to serve. Oh yes. So this service attitude is based on this concept, on this principle of alertness, taking opportunities to serve. There are so many opportunities that are arising. We can serve the Vaishnavas, we can serve Krishna, and we should always volunteer and be eager to take every opportunity. The more the better. Those who have that kind of service attitude, they are the devotees that become advanced. They are the devotees that attract the mercy of Krishna. It is mentioned in the scripture that mercy of Krishna is causeless. It's causeless mercy. And that is sort of a bewildering concept. Why is the mercy of Krishna causeless? When we see that devotees are chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting, I mean, it looks like there is a cause, isn't it? It looks like, you know, all that chanting did it, right? Or devotees are doing a whole sadhana. So many things we're doing, right? Every morning, you know, you get up, offer your obeisances immediately. Then shower, tilak, okay, you know, like... It doesn't look costless at all. It looks like we are constantly engaged in service, and then one day we hope you get the reward. And doesn't the Bhagavad Gita say the same thing? Yeyatamam prapadyante tanstateva bhajamiyaham. As you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So, costless mercy is a little bewildering if you think about it, isn't it? So why is this mercy called causeless? It seems to have a cause, because the mercy seems to be related to devotional service. So no. Because Krishna is not obliged. He's not obliged. He doesn't have to. He can let us chant and chant and chant and chant. Yeah, chant as much as you like, you know. But it's not that if you chant Now you've chanted 1,000,000 names. Bing! Yes, you know, the red number, 1,000,000, you have reached. And, you know, and the skies opened, and rays of light shone down upon us. And then Gandharvas with wings came down, and singing transcendental hymns. And yes, and suddenly, I felt that Krishna was so near, and all my consciousness was transformed, and I was like a new person. And never before did I feel such devotion on the day that I chanted my 1,000,000th name. No. Sorry. You can chant 10,000,000 names, and still nothing may happen. And then again, another one may chant only a few names, and result may come, because the mercy is causeless. It depends on Krishna. He is completely free to do anything or everything. Asishva padaratam pinastamam nadarsanam namatam karutuva yatam avidadatalam pato matprananatas tu se evana para. Yes, Krishna, he is sometimes present before us, and other times he's not. Sometimes he makes us broken hearted by not being present before us. He can do anything or everything. He's always our worshipful Lord unconditionally. So therefore, devotional service is causeless. But it doesn't mean that we cannot do something to attract devotional service. And certainly, dasyam, that service attitude, is what attracts Krishna. One can purchase Krishna by that service attitude. Mukti dadati bhakti na karichit. Liberation, I will give you. You want? Yes. Take. I have for you liberation. You want it? Yes. Mukti you want? Yes. Take. How much you want? Take it. Take it all. Yes, you take. If I have some bhakti? No. Bhakti? No. I don't have any bhakti. You want bhakti from me? No. I don't have. Krishna, what are you hiding behind your back? What is that? No, nothing. Krishna, you are hiding something behind your back. No, nothing. Krishna, it's bhakti. Krishna, give me that bhakti. No, that I will not give you. No. Krishna, I want it. No, I will not give it to you. But you want it. Yeah. Yes, Krishna, I really want it. No, I'm not giving it to you. Krishna, I really, really want this bhakti. Okay, then I'll give it to you. But only if you really want it. Because if I give you bhakti, by this bhakti, you will purchase me. Krishna becomes purchased by bhakti. Krishna said, Lord Chaitanya said about Vasudev Datta, he said he has purchased me. He said he can sell my body in the marketplace. He can do with me whatever I like. I am just like his slave, Krishna said. Whatever he wants, I must do. And Vasudev Datta prayed, my Lord, please deliver the whole universe. Then, yes, Lord Chaitanya said, all right, Vasudev. Yes, I will do it. Vasudev said, please, place all the karma of all living beings on me so that they can go back to Godhead and I'll take those reactions. Lord Chaitanya said, Vasudev, my dear Vasudev, you don't have to do that. He said, you know, there are so many universes just that like there are many mustard seeds in a bag of mustard seeds. If you take one out, no one will notice it. He said, so if one universe stops to exist, no problem. No one will notice it. There are so many universes. You want all living beings in this universe to be delivered? All right, let them be delivered. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya granted that to Vasudev Datta. That story is a little bewildering because if everybody went back to Godhead, then what are we doing here? Then where are we coming from? So it is bewildering. And then there's a similar story in relation to Haridas Thakur, who was chanting so many rounds, and it is said that all the jivas in the entire universe went back to Godhead. So then what happened? He said, but then the universe again filled up with the sukshma jivas, the jivas who had not become active. There is a class of jivas who are so deeply sunk into ignorance, there is absolutely zero activity. Nothing. Nothing. Therefore they have no bodies because they have not one single desire. See, as long as they are just totally dull. They're dull. They're sukshma jivas. And they just have a subtle existence and nothing else. Because we have 8,400,000 species of life. Because we want to try it out. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. Do you want to dance? Yes, I want to dance. Then you can be a kangaroo and you just jump around for one life. Isn't it? So like this, you know. Different, you know. You can see dogs, you know. They love running fast. They really like it. Yeah. You see someone, they have these sticks with the ball in the parks and they throw these balls and the dog run like anything. And then a car comes in the street and this car, this dog is trying to keep up with the car. And it's doing it, it's doing it. And then, you know, as it keeps up with the car, it's biting at the tires, you know. Just to show them, like, who do you think that you can run faster than me? See, I can run as fast as you. And the dog turns around victorious, and meanwhile the car shifts in a higher gear, and vroom, you know, just moves along at much higher speed. But the dog doesn't think like that. The dog thinks, I can keep up with him. I beat him. I can run faster than he can. Because he's into it, into being able to run faster than he can. So just see, if you want to run faster than someone else, what you will become in the next life. Oh. Mm. Yes, Prabhupada used to say like that. They're running here and there, the dogs, instead in the cars, they're running here and there on wheels. They're running on wheels. Yeah? Prabhupada said, same. Either run on four legs or run on wheels. Same thing. At the traffic light. Yay! You know, I got away first, you know. Boom! I beat everyone, you know. And next life, you're in the horse races, you know. Like this, life after life, because we have desire. We have desire, we get bodies. But these sukshma jivas, just so dull, completely dull. There is no initiative at all. Nothing. See, we have some initiative, you know. What do you want? They ask on the air, what do you want to drink? What do you want to drink? Everyone wakes up. It's amazing, even the ones that sleep. That you have these people on planes, they, as soon as they sit on the plane, they start to sleep, and only when you land they wake up. But in between, whenever they come with the drinks, they suddenly wake up. And the sixth sense, they know. And, you know, and they have ordered their drink. Everyone has a desire. This desire, that desire. Oh yes, no, I like this. No, I don't like that. That means initiative. Anyway, these sukshma jivas, it said, they are coming, they are filling up the universe. So if at the time of Vasudev Datta the whole world was delivered, then it means that we are sukshma jivas. We were sukshma jivas. Just see. Totally dull. So in some of us there's still a little bit left over. Anybody home? No. You're going to knock on the forehead to see if there's anybody home. Anyone inside? But devotees become active, more and more active. They have to, you know, it's like as a devotee, it is not that we try to suppress our nature and that we have to give up so many things. We have to learn to engage our nature, and in that our nature develops. You see devotees like me, I still remember the first time I had to give a speech in front in school, in front of the whole class. I mean, somehow or other I got so nervous that my ears, you know, my ears started to make a noise, right? And so loud that I couldn't hear. So I was, from the anxiety, my blood pressure or something went so high that I heard this in my ears. And the teacher was making comments and I couldn't hear a word. I couldn't hear it. And I was too embarrassed to say, you know, that I couldn't hear. So I just sort of smiled as if I understood what the teacher said. And didn't understand nothing. Oh, God. It was a terrible talk about the Eiffel Tower. But somehow or other my parents had given me a book about the Eiffel Tower and there was so much information, so it was kind of easy, you know. I didn't have to prepare so much, it was all there. So, oh my God, did I hate that lecture. Well, as things have changed, haven't they, you know. Sometimes I think, when's he gonna finish, you know. How long is this gonna go on for? So, as a devotee, one develops one's nature, because it's obvious, because there is a principle, and the principle is called surrender, Prabhu. And surrender, Prabhu, means you can't really say, I can't do that. I don't do things like that. You know what I mean? In the material world, you can say, like, well, you know, I don't cook, you know. I just don't cook. I don't do that, you know. It's not my thing. But in spiritual life, I mean, surrender. That's how we grew up in the Hare Krishna movement. You joined the movement and they said, can you cook? You said, not really. I said, oh, it's easy. Just, we'll show you. Put some water on the stove, this, that. You know, turn it low. At the end, throw some spices and you got khichdi, no problem. And there you go, you know. And you're cooking breakfast. And 1 week later, you're the head of the kitchen. That's how it goes with anything, you know. Serious. Oh my God. And you wind up in the craziest situations in the Hare Krishna movement, on the principle of that surrender. You find yourself doing things, you know, that you know you shouldn't have done, and you know you would have never done, but you're doing it anyway because they're asking you to do it. Right? I came here into Australia in the 80s, and I'm a bit organized, you know, and I like to organize my things. So, for Australia to get a long-term visa is quite difficult, right? So they said, nah, it's okay. You just come in on a tourist visa and you just overstay your visa. And I go like, and then my guru told me that. So, yeah. It was a transcendental order, you know, from the representative of Krishna. So, you know, I mean, I had to do some serious surrender there, because I'm someone, I don't like that, you know. I like to have my visas and my papers, etc. Okay, you know, I like to have them all legal, etc. But that was not everything. No. Then they arranged it, again, on Guru's order. There was a driver's license from a devotee who had years ago blooped, right? Still lying around. And in those days, the New South Wales driver's license didn't have a picture. So they said, you just take this picture. So I became Michael Westcott. Michael Westcott was my name. And I got a library card and Medicare and everything, right? In that name. And it wasn't me. James Bond. Serious, you know? I was living here as James Bond, overstaying with a false identity and everything, driving around on Saikatan. And I knew it was totally crazy, but it was transcendental because it was Guru's order. So, phew, you know, it some serious surrender. I still had my own driver's license also in my pocket, and I thought, if I make an accident, I just show my own license. And the other papers, I said, yeah, that's from my friend Mike, he forgot them. he left them lying around, so I was carrying them with me to give it to him, you know. Like that, you know, I thought that way, I'll just, because, you know, you're not going to make an accident on a false license, you know, you go in the can for things like that, right? I said, yeah, then I can really stay in Australia for a long time. Anyway, so I had a little bit of a parachute to jump, you know, in case I had to. But meanwhile, what was I supposed to do? I had to surrender. Let's see, at least that's what Shastra told me. So, don't worry, I won't ask my disciples to do such a thing. It's like, because I don't like such things, I like it. Get your visas and your papers and so on. But, yes, so it may be a somewhat awkward example. But somehow or other it happened like that in my life, and it was an example of how I got caught in a situation and had to go beyond something which I would have never done. You know, never, never, never. I don't do things like that. Forget it. I don't. But I did it. I did it because of, well, yeah, I had to surrender. And it is like that. There's a story of Shamasunda, who on the order of Prabhupada had to go to George Harrison and ask George Harrison for a donation for printing the Krishna book. And Shamasunda said, oh, no, I can't do that, because, you know, I'm close friends with George, that is true. But, you know, he's very sensitive and people ask him for money, so I really can't do that. Prabhupada said, no, it's okay. Just ask him. Krishna will help you. So now, Shamasunda was caught, you know. I mean, he had his friendship with George, and he knew George, and he knew, you know, the basis of the friendship, and he knew he really couldn't ask him. And then there was Prabhupada, who said, yeah, just ask him. Just ask him. Krishna will help him. The order of Guru. So that night there was a dinner with George, and Sham went, and he's sitting next to George, you know, and you know, they were already at the dessert, and he had still hadn't asked him. And then he was thinking, oh my God, you know, Prabhupada wanted me to ask it, and if I don't do it, it's to disobey the order of the spiritual masters, an offense, you know, my spiritual life will be finished. What am I going to do now? So during the dessert, he goes, George, yes, Sean, you know, George, Prabhupada wrote a new book. Oh, really? Oh. What's it about? Oh, it's called Krishna Book. It's really nice, all stories about Krishna. And, you know, George said, oh, sounds very interesting. Yeah, and then, well, you know, George, you know, actually, you see, somehow or other, there was a little, you know, money short for the printing, only 19,000 pounds. And George His face was getting tight. He was turning pale. And Shamasundara was cringing. He said, oh God, this is the end, you know. And said, and yes, and that's, and Prabhupada thought maybe you could help and donate the money. And just then, you know, while George looked really stressed, suddenly a thunderclap and all the lights went out. 30 seconds later, the light came back on. George was smiling, pulled out his checkbook and said, how can I refuse after that? And wrote the check, £19,000, for printing the Krishna book. So later, Shamasundara came back and told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, see, I told you Krishna would help. But the surrender, he had to go beyond what he would have ever done. So that is spiritual life. In spiritual life, we go beyond what we would have ever done. And the result is that rather than becoming, than suppressing our nature, in spiritual life we develop aspects of our nature that we never knew we had. Right? We never knew we had it in us. But somehow or other, you know, for Krishna, well, you have to do. And then somehow or other you start doing it, and then, yeah, you find a way to do it, and suddenly you realize, hey, I can do it. I never knew I could, but I can. Right? And then, yes, then you learn how to do it, and in this way we develop our personality. So rather than minimizing ourselves, we are developing and developing our nature. And that is devotional service. And more aspects of our nature are growing in spiritual life. And in that way, we become more and more complete and more ecstatic. In doing all these things for Krishna. Okay. Time's up. Any questions? Any comments?
Maharaj, you mentioned that the sukshma, you know, the body is basically, you said you use the word desireless. We also, you know, like, I talk about free ourselves from material desires. What's the difference between that desireless stage and this desire, you know, freeing ourselves from the material desire?
Yeah. They are desireless in the mode of ignorance. So they are just totally, they have a desire to be in the material energy. But they've gone into complete dullness. Everyone has that tendency to close himself off, to switch off. People take intoxicants. People go to bed, not only because they want to sleep, but some people hide under the blankets from all the trouble of the world. Just pull the blankets over your head, you know, and the world doesn't exist anymore. There are animals and people that when they are in danger, they close their eyes. And then the danger is not there anymore. So that is the tendency. Just shut down, shut down. So that is the state of the jivas who are in that sukshma state. Totally inactive, completely dull. That is the mode of ignorance. Where one who becomes liberated and is desireless, that is different. Such that in liberation, one is free from material desires, but one is full of spiritual desires, full of desires to serve Krishna. But one has no more desire just for himself, because that looks all foolish. The whole world is glued to the TV, you know, for the World Cup, right? The World Cup, you know, everyone's watching. Right? It's all about the ball, right? The ball, you know, the World Cup and the ball. And Prabhupada is speaking about the players and the ball. And he says, they think they are the players, but actually they are the ball. Because they can be kicked any moment, any moment. So like this, you know, a devotee is not interested in all these things, but the whole millions, hundreds of millions of people are following the World Cup. The streets are quiet. In India, when it's like a big, big cricket match, big, finally, you know, the traffic is normal. There's no one on the road. It's like driving through to Delhi one time, during a big, big cricket final. It was great. Great. I just drove straight through all the way. Nothing. Nobody on the road. Fantastic. They should have cricket finals every day. But, you know, a devotee loses that interest because he's just like, yeah, it's nice if someone hits the ball and it's 120 kilometers an hour moving around and this and that. But, you know, if it's not transcendental, we lose taste. If it's not connected to Krishna, we lose taste for all these things. So, gradually, those desires disappear. The material desires disappear. But desires for Krishna, they will remain. They will develop. They will come bigger and bigger. More and more. More and more desires to serve Krishna. So we are not so into becoming desireless, actually. We're just redirecting our desires to Krishna. And that is what we call desirelessness. Redirected desires to Krishna. Sunyavad is the Buddhist state, right? Where one also, yes, becomes desireless. Again, that is not transcendental. That is a material state. Sensual. A sexy phone. The sadhu is supposed to speak the truth, you know. There's no bhakti. No bhakti. You know, you see so much devotion, so much, you know, we give big offerings to the demigods, all with profit in mind, all with the benediction in mind. So we're not worshipping the devata for the sake of, out of love, we're worshipping the devata for the benediction. So it's not the service that we want, it's the benediction that we want. In bhakti, we worship out of love. We love the service. Krishna, just allow me to serve you. This is what all I want. I want nothing else. I'm not serving you because I want to ask you for something else. No. I just want this service. Please allow me to do this. Therefore, bhakti includes love. Yeah? Bhaj Dhatu includes love. Yeah? There is no love for the demigods. It's business. I give you these prayers and now you please give me all of these things. Therefore, there is no bhakti. It's also with a B, but it's called business. Business. Any other questions? Yes.
As the 10th companion of Krishna consciousness, and because we have taken the vow, so we know we don't have to do the broad physical activities.
Well, that is the beginning. Taking the vows is, we don't take the vows on the first day. You know, you come to the temple and somehow or other someone had a bad habit, you know. For some it's smoking, for another one it's tea, you know. Whatever it may be, you know. There are people who cannot give up tea. and you throw away their spiritual life over tea. Yeah, it's like, what a thing, right? Just for tea, to give up the spiritual world. Others, it's another habit. So, for many people, it's not on the day they come that they manage to give up everything. It takes time. It takes some time. So that's okay. That's the cleansing. Yeah. But if someone immediately can follow the regulative principles, okay, that means the dirt goes out very quick. And then, of course, the attachment to those sinful activities is still there. So the mind is still dwelling on it. So that is then the next problem. And we have to actually detach also on the mental platform. Because it's not enough to follow four regulative principles, but to constantly dwell on sense gratification. One has to also rise above that we stop dwelling on sense gratification and actually think of Krishna. Like today's Ekadasi, and some people, they may want to fast the whole day, and that's fine. But if then the whole day you think of food, you know, you're fasting the whole day and just thinking about eating the whole day, then better eat something and think of Krishna. The idea is that we should think more of Krishna on Ekadasi. Take a day, should increase our thinking, hearing, chanting, and remembering of Krishna. But if through fasting we're only thinking about, you know, I'm so hungry, I'm starving, oh my God, when can I eat? Oh, and I'm missing the potatoes, oh, you know, and all these other things. And then you're meditating the whole Ekadasi just on and eating. Better eat something, get it over and done with, and get into Krishna. So it's hard to not only to give up the gross sinful activities, but then to give up the attachment to these things. Because the problem is that what is classified as sinful in the Shastra is classified as normal in society. And therefore, everyone already has some bad habits. Something. Even if it's only onions. But there are people who are so attached to onions. And I had this man, he did everything, chant Hare Krishna for years, but he kept on arguing, but why we cannot take onions? Why? Why? Please give me one reason. I have not found any real reason. What is the reason? What is the problem? Of course, there is a Puranic reference how these things came about. And the story is that once upon a time there was a Brahmana who was performing a yajna, and a sacrifice where a cow was being offered and then rejuvenated by mantra. So this cow, this is called Gavalamba, forbidden in Kali Yuga. Aswamedha Kavalam, forbidden. Anyway, this was going on, and at the time his wife was expecting. And you know better than me that when ladies are expecting, they get some craving for certain types of foodstuff. So according to the Vedic injunction, it's very important that they get what they want to eat. It said because if they don't get what they want to eat, they'll get a child that is always drooling. I'm just quoting now. Okay. Anyway, so this particular lady, while her husband was doing the yajna, smelt the flesh and she developed a desire. And it became very strong. So she grabbed a small piece of the flesh with the idea to eat it. Then her husband was, through mantra, reviving the cow. And saw, to his shock, to see there was a piece missing. And see, having this flesh, and suddenly it came to life. And she felt it coming to life. So she, in disgust, she threw it on the ground, and where it hit the ground, onions, garlic, and it said even carrots emerged. And that's why we don't eat onions and garlic. Now, why are we eating carrots? I don't know. I don't know. But I must admit, after I heard the story, it didn't taste the same. Okay. I eat them, but not with the same gusto like before. You know. Definitely no onions and garlic. Yuck. Yeah. Are we done? No. Yes. Okay, so I said we should go beyond our limits in terms of service. Doesn't mean we should accept any service. Well, I think we should not automatically say no. You know, we should have an attitude when service is offered. We should very seriously consider if we can do it. And somehow or other try to accommodate it. Whatever service is asked from us, we should try and accommodate it if at all possible. Of course, sometimes we may already have too much other service and then we just can't take on any more service and we have to say no. And you can't do things simultaneously. Like, you know, someone asks me, can you be here? And someone asks me, can you be there? You know, and I cannot extend myself. So I have to say no to someone. But we should try to avoid saying no. If there's no good reason why we cannot do it, then we should do it. It should not just be, well, I'm not so attracted to that kind of service, I'll say no to that. And this service looks nicer, I'll say yes to that. No, that's not a good mentality. One nice service, one not so nice service. No. Service in itself is nice. And so whatever it is, you should be willing to say yes if it doesn't conflict with some other important interest. I have an example of the juggler. A juggler is juggling balls. Yes. So I think that in spiritual life we have three balls to juggle. And one is our personal well-being, health, peace of mind, that to some extent peace of mind. Then there is our sadhana, our spiritual practice, the second ball, and the third ball is some service for the mission. Yeah. So these three have to be balanced. So sometimes the service that is asked from us may come in conflict with our sadhana. Then we have to say no. Sometimes the service comes in conflict with our physical well-being, right? With our health, or, well, it may be something that's just too much for our mind. Like if someone asks, you know, you, can you go to China? Right? It may just, you'll think about it, think, oh, I'm just not ready yet, you know what I mean? I just like, you know, just let me, you know, do my little seva in the mandir on Tuesdays and Fridays, and for now let me just get steady at that, you know. And China is maybe too big a jump for me now. Yeah. Maybe. So like that, we have to look after our physical well-being, even our mental well-being. If someone says go preach in New Guinea to the the cannibals, well, you know, like there are limits, right? That may be too much. Even I would think, like, well, I don't know about that. If someone would tell me to preach to them, I might consider hiring a helicopter and dropping little books or something on them. You know? Well, I don't know if I would land on the ground, you know. So there are limits also to what we mentally can handle. Yeah. So personal well-being is a consideration, sadhana a consideration. But when there's no good arguments to say no, then we must say yes.
So what happens when you are sort of conflicting personal well-being and there's a challenge coming to us to be stuck to one personal instead of well to accommodate them?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they say there are three circles: the comfort circle, the stretching circle, and the pain circle. So, you know, in the course of our service, we go in all these three circles. Sometimes service is so difficult, it takes you into the pain circle. Of course, if you're too long in the pain circle, then you have to go to the hospital in comfort circle for a while. So that's so we need all three, but a devotee should be inclined to go into the stretching circle. We should be willing to stretch in our surrender too. And if we're too much in comfort circle, then we'll just become weak. Yeah? And we'll become spiritually dry, and we just don't feel that we're on the cutting edge. We don't feel alive. So when we go into the stretching circle in our surrender in devotional service, then we feel, yes, I'm really trying something, and we feel spiritually very enlivened. Therefore, a devotee should go for the stretching circle. But it is good when we take such decisions that we do it with blessings of senior Vaishnavas. Because, you know, like we can stretch ourselves too much, right? And go, and then put ourselves under too much pressure and actually endanger our spiritual safety. Because we have to also make sure to keep ourselves safe within certain boundaries. We are now situated, we are no longer in Maya, we are now situated in spiritual life. Well, because we have safe boundaries, we regularly are in contact with the temple. We are every day chanting 16 rounds. We are keeping association with devotees. We are reading. These are all safety measures that keep us from falling down. And one should not think, I'm beyond that. Therefore, we need to keep also some safety. So if we start to play with taking on challenges for Krishna, now, yes, you know, I want to go into Africa, and I'll go, like, you know, to, like, the villages and all that, you know, or to South Africa, I'm going to preach in the townships, I'm going to live in the townships and preach. But it may be difficult to live in the townships. Very difficult. It may. So we should do it with blessings. We should not just risk falling down. So, juggling the balls. Three balls. Personal well-being, sadhana, and mission. And all balls need attention. And if only one ball gets the attention, then not good. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.